Welcome to Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC Plus in this case. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 11, Episode 9, titled No Other Way. Aaron, I don't know about you, but I have ascended to a new plane on my journey to become one with The Walking Dead. I no longer question what I'm being shown. I just let it wash over me now. Walking Dead is neither good nor bad. It just is. I believe I've reached...
It's a force, like gravity.
Nerfwacha? Is that a place? Valhwacha.
It's just east of the mythical Beach Boys Island, Kokomo.
Right.
You sail east there, and you'll get to the Forgotten Shores, sure.
Eventually, yeah. how are you feeling about The Walking Dead episode... Season 11, episode 9.
So, like, I feel like this episode felt a little cheap, and maybe that there's still some COVID restrictions, and maybe they're saving up some money for later in the you know, just, like, something about it felt a little... But, like, you know, I really like the emotional beats they were hitting here, and I feel like closing out the Reapers with an asterisk mark, they were just about to overstay their welcome, and we were kind of expressing, like, God, we're kind of, like... You know, it feels like the more interesting thing is Commonwealth thing going on, and we need to get that kind of going on. And I was liking most of what they're doing. There's two big caveats. When you end on a cliffhanger, it really steals the energy from you're borrowing energy from the next season back into the previous season.
Yeah.
Because the coolest thing in the episode happened literally 3 seconds into it. Mm-hmm. You can't stop a zombie getting exploded by a Chinese firework.
Sure.
That you just can't. I'm sorry. The episode only has one way to go. Every once in a while, like a series will overcome that. Like the one I can think of is Star Trek The Next Generation's Best of Both Worlds. Riker's about to lay the hammer down on the Borg ship. It's got his beloved captain prisoner. And you're like, oh, my God, what the fuck's going to happen? And the Borg just eat it the next. It's so, like, the tension stays because they're still here. It's like, so that was a problem. The other one is, what the fuck with this time jump?
Dude, I love the transition that happens there, but yeah.
It's amazing. The way they did that.
That was a hell of a transition.
Matt, and that helps when you're up against a gray sky and all that kind of stuff, but still, it was such a great transition.
Into just insanity, right? Like, full-blown insanity. Like, Daryl is wearing the Commonwealth uniform.
Dude.
Like, soldier uniform.
There's two things. One, if this is going to be like little Judith running through the forest, finding like that kind of flashback where this is where we live now, I don't know how I feel about yada yada yadding through all the development.
I don't think it is. That's the thing. Like, so what AMC does with these shows is they immediately show you a next time on. Like, it's before credits. It's like before everything.
Oh, I see.
There's like next time on, and then I see like Daryl getting introduced to the Commonwealth, stuff like that. So they're not just going to yada yada past that, but it does seem wild in the moment.
This feels like a bit of narrative lack of self-confidence that like we need to punch people in the face at this series to you can see like how fucking crazy things are going to get, where it's like I was actually pulling up. I'm like, you know what? This look that Gabriel and Daryl are giving themselves about Maggie and them probably thinking that Maggie killed Negan, that's going to be an interesting thing to see play off in this season. Mm-hmm. And then they just skip forward to like Daryl kicking in the gates of Hilltop being like, nah, Maggie, your evil reign as queen is over. I was kind of disappointed.
Yeah, no, I think we'll get to see more of that. It's just, yeah, that is, I think you described it well. You described all of The Walking Dead well, which is just like, a lack of confidence in what they're actually doing.
Did they make Miss Kang do that? Did they put a gun to their head and say, look, you're either going to sign off on this script so that we can pre-sale another 500,000 commercials. Either you're going to put your signature on this script or your brains.
That's the thing. If they don't have the hook, right, to make sure that the small, the dwindling number of people that they've got on the hook are going to stay on the hook next week, if they don't have that, they feel like they failed. And I don't know. I mean, for me, good storytelling is its own hook, but they don't take that, right?
That's what I'm saying. I'm feeling like I'm Daryl as the viewer. Like, I don't feel like my choices even matter, man. I can quit the show. I can keep watching the show. No one gives a shit. Like, it's like, damn, I was really looking forward to seeing the descent of Maggie Greene.
Yeah.
That, like, I think, and you know, I think, again, that's another thing that, like, works in the show's favor is, like, we really had objections to how they told the beginning of that story last season. But all those individual episodes were like, I'm not sure if Maggie would do it that way. Or, not sure if all that stuff has fallen away. And you just realize that these guys have the bad blood that goes all the way back to her husband, Glenn, being beat to death.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of works.
Yeah.
And I, like I said, I'm just super, super sorry that they spoiled their own story.
Yeah, a lot of good insert shots with Negan just kind of observing Maggie in this episode that I really appreciated. I mean, when you put two good actors on the screen, kind of no matter what you give them, it's going to have some feeling to it.
It was such a great scene. Norman Reedus and Seth Gillian, is that his name?
Them too, yeah.
Sitting by the side, just like it's all nonverbal, like, mm-hmm. the storytelling of like, oh, we all know what the, and it really brought me in. Like, it made me as a watcher feel like I was part of the survivors group, because like I'm giving Daryl and Gabe the eyes too, like,
yeah.
You know, like, I know she didn't, but you guys certainly think, yeah. I felt like I don't know, I was part of a shared secret. And then
don't say nonverbal storytelling out loud, because then the next week we're going to get an episode that's just completely silent. Nobody's talking. They're going to go overboard with this shit. That's how The Walking Dead does, right? They're very reactionary.
Yeah, yeah.
To get in
Angela
there.
Angela Kang watched Castaway last weekend, and she's like, you know what? It's going to be Daryl and Dog, and, mm-hmm. you know, that's it. That's it. Then yeah. I think we got one of those episodes, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
Daryl.
That's how we got in this whole mess with Leah.
Yeah, Daryl roaming the 100-acre woods and finding mm-hmm. love. But no Rick corpse.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Like I said, I'm in for, I guess, whatever The Walking Dead is putting down for these final 16 episodes.
And I am super interested to see how this stuff with the Commonwealth works out, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Like, it's an interesting now. Like, I think I hope they don't just like play it to where it's obvious the Commonwealth is super evil, because I think that's like the.
Well, they can't, right? So the one thing that this. Flash forward 6 months does is it tells us that Daryl is on board with whatever's happening there. And Daryl being like, I think the only cast member to be in every single season, was Carol in season one?
Yes, she was. Yep. Carol Peltier was in season one.
She was?
Her,
okay.
Sophia, yeah.
Then I guess they're both in all the seasons.
They're both the OGs for yeah. sure.
But like, and those are the characters I trust, right? And so if Daryl is putting on the stormtrooper armor and he's going yeah. up to the gates of Hilltop and knocking on the door, I feel like there's a good
Maggie
reason for it.
Probably has got some kind of crazy, weird cult thing going on.
Yeah, she's like, you know, up in the mountains taking hostages and demanding change or something. I don't know, but...
yeah. She's like Carol without anyone to check her, kind of. It is an interesting place to take Maggie. And I'm very into that. And I'm into, like, again, there's this trade-off between security and, like, peace and safety and freedom.
Yeah.
That is something that I think that we're kind of struggling with. Like, you know, how much do we
For
want
sure.
the government power to have? And even if you want them to have power over, like, healthcare and things, do you want them to have power over... what speech you get to engage in, and you know what schools you get to go to, and what media you get to see. Like, it's the stuff that we're debating right now, and I think that they could have a lot of interesting, nuanced things to say. Now, will they? I don't
That's
know.
That's the thing. I said, look, I've climbed the mountain, I've fought my battles, and I've made it to Valhalla.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
I'm still worried that The Walking Dead is not the right show to handle these topics.
Yeah, and if not, like, we'll definitely. Hey, we're committed to seeing this thing through the end at this point. Like,
yeah,
I can get through a 16 of anything.
sure, we're definitely in. So, speaking of getting in, why don't we get into the recap?
Yeah,
but first, let's take a quick break.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga-sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was, and those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
All right, let's do this recap. Huacha, baby. We pick right back up where we left off with the Huacha firing and zombies inside the gates of Meridian? What was this city called?
Medina? No, that's the station in the Expanse. It's Maggie's Town. Maggie Town is what I have referred to in my notes.
Maggie Town. Maggie fights her way into a building, but she is followed in. Negan and some other dude, I think, he's Elijah. I think he
yeah,
was...
Yeah, it's Elijah. Casey Jones?
In our
hearts and minds, but he's actually Elijah.
I feel like I was super confused by how they treated him last season. And
oh, yeah.
It's only now that I'm coming to terms with it.
There's this huge theory that he was the guy who was flambéed on the cross,
yes.
You know, as the traitor.
Yes.
And I'm still, at the end of this episode, completely confused about his affiliation, how he came to know Maggie and got into Maggie Town.
I know that confused. He had a Josephine at some point, and I'm supposed to be feeling stuff for him because Josephine, but...
That's his sister, I believe, they established. Okay. But man, I don't... And I'm also like, I don't know why we don't just stay at Maggie Town. Like, that's where all the food is. They still got functional walls. They had classrooms and stuff. Like, maybe Maggie Town's a shithole compared to Alexandria at its prime.
Mm-hmm.
Alexandria? I don't know. There might be options besides Maggie rebuilding a hilltop. I don't know. And joining the Commonwealth. I just thought that was... Maggie Town looked pretty livable. You need to mow its lawn.
Sure. Yeah, you might need to repair some Huacha damage, but...
Right, it's fine, it's fine. Yeah. Speaking of the Huacha, I love that shot Aaliyah just stone-faced looking at the destruction that she is wreaking upon everything. Like, that Huacha firing in the background and her just, like, staring down like Nero watching Rome burn was a fucking awesome shot. And...
There's some... Yeah, go.
And the Huacha itself, like, it is kind of pretty badass. I liked it.
Oh, yeah. The Huacha was as promised. It was pretty sweet. I have questions. I have a lot of questions about the effectiveness of a Huacha. The dude that Maggie's fighting seems to think it's so effective he can just kind of hold her out there and the Huacha will get her.
I thought more
effective than, like, actively choking her or stabbing her or something.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's the thing. It's like, dude, if the Huacha hit her... Now you just got a Huacha'd up Maggie Green, and she's going to explode and probably kill you. Like, true. It almost happened to her.
Yeah. I will also say, Huacha, surprisingly sticky. The bullets from the Huacha, or the shrapnel, the projectiles, let's say.
Yeah.
I get them sticking into walkers, because walkers are squishy, very, very squishy at this point. We'll talk about that later. Sticking into a dude who's armored up...
Weren't those Huachas spear tipped though?
Were they?
I thought they had arrowheads. Yeah, they did. They had the explosive ordnance, but I did think they had some kind of like steel arrowhead.
Maybe
attachment.
So. That makes a little more sense. Sure.
I think that some of the other stuff about Maggie Town, like, I appreciated them establishing the In Case of Fire bucket and bell early.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Yeah, Chekhov's bell, so that later, and they did also quick insert when Negan was considering it, so like, because I feel like in other seasons, they might have just have him come out with a bell and throw pocket dust in someone's eyes and be like, and I'm like, what the fuck, where did this come from? But they did a really good job of establishing some of the environment that they're going to be using later on in the episode. The secret passages to Panic Room, like,
sure.
Maggie is the master of Maggie Town, and she's able to move... unseen within it, kind of like the weird hillbillies from the mansion last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's good stuff.
I do wonder though, you know, when she meets up with Negan and Elijah, they're like, she says, I got a tail, and they're like, we lost ours. How you're limping around with some dude who can barely walk, you're moving half a mile an hour, how did you lose your tail?
Their tail got watched.
Maybe their tail got watched.
The tail guy, like, I mean, it's that's not does that. Not have a friend or foe distinguisher.
No.
It just seems to really light everything up.
I think, you know, Maggie's making excuses here about, like, I got to stay till dawn, and I'm not leaving Daryl and Gabriel behind. But I do think she's here for revenge. I think Negan is right.
Oh, 100%. And I think that's what one of the interesting things is, like, throughout the episode, I kept on like, well, because, like, Negan just wants to get the fuck out and survive.
He wants to live. Yep.
But I'm kind of with Maggie about, like, well, you just can't leave Daryl and Gabriel.
Mm-hmm.
But also, that's kind of like, even if Gabriel and Daryl were there, she would use her relationship with them to kind of bend them to her will for vengeance. Like, that's, I keep coming back to, like, Maggie cares more about making these people pay than she does. And I wish I felt the same, because these people, like, they're crazy religious zealots, but like, and they kill a whole bunch of red shirts.
Right. This is the trouble with all of that happening off screen as Maggie's like off doing another show, right?
Yeah, we could have used some bonus episodes establishing Maggie Town and making us care, because I think they could have done it with Little Herschel and, you know, a couple, you know, two episodes of showing Maggie Town thriving and the school's running and then these assholes running in and taking it over and then hunting them, you know, killing, you know, families, picking them off one at a time as they're doing this slow. I think that would have, yeah, but as it is, it's kind of like, eh.
Yeah. I'm with you. All right. We go back to Alexandria, where Tara and Lydia are fighting walkers. They find out that Gracie and Judith aren't with the group.
Oh, that's Rosita. Tara, fist bump died.
Oh, shit. You know what's hilarious is I had saying Tara and Enid before, and I realized that Enid was not Lydia.
Oh, my God.
Look, man, this is the first episode back in months. Give me a break. It's not Tara. She's
not
dead.
In zombie fighting form.
She's not fist bumping anybody anymore. No, it's what's her name? Rosita.
Rosita.
Who? Yeah, she right. She was practicing her punches last season. I remember this. So they find out Gracie and Judith aren't with the group. And we go over to where they are, and there the kids are down in the basement, water flooding in, zombies trying to get in, they're barring the doors.
This is where we left them last season.
Exactly.
Cliffhanger, like a 6-part cliffhanger this episode.
Yep. And then we kind of get, you know, treated to them trying to barricade the doors, and then we go over to Jerry and Aaron, who can't put out the windmill fire, but they need to because it's either part of the wall or they're worried that it's going to fall onto the wall.
I think that's the thing. Yeah. It'll knock down several sections permanently.
Yeah. But then they hear Aaron hears his daughter's whistle and runs off toward it. There's a huge problem here. This is the worst scene by far in the entire episode.
Oh shit.
And the most confusing part, I think, of the last episode as well, this windmill, like they set up, here they set up a problem, right, that needs a solution. Like if the windmill falls, there is a very good chance that it's going to take out the wall and we're going to lose Alexandria. Mm-hmm. And we can't put out the fire that's threatening to cause the windmill to fall because the wind keeps stoking it. Despite the rain, it won't go out. Mm-hmm. And I kept waiting and waiting and waiting in this episode for them to resolve that problem, and then they don't. It's just But they do, but it's off screen. They never address it again.
They never even come back to it.
Aaron and Jerry can't put out the fire, so they say, Carol, Connie, you go put out the fire. We'll go do other things.
Right.
And then they just succeed. How?
Yeah.
How?
Because Carol and Connie are badasses, and Aaron and Jerry are kind of doofuses, apparently.
Well, most shows keep track like of Aaron, the limits they set up.
Aaron's got a mace hand, and all you can see is zombies. He doesn't, like, we're going to carry a fire brigade bucket with that.
Yeah, if you can two-hand buckets, you could have put it out, but...
Yeah, I do. It is, but no, you're exactly right. There is a missing five-minute arc of the ladies heroically... Yes. I had the same kind of problems. Like, how is this fire rate? Like, okay, I get the wind is stoking it, but there's so much water that waterfalls are entering your basement, like 3-4 foot deep. Like, that's a lot of fucking. I don't know if a fire department could do better.
Let's just say that basement had water problems before the apocalypse.
Yeah, maybe it's one that said. I bet a fireman or a fire person writes in and says, "Well, if you get up there like with axes and cut holes in the roof, but like the roof is shedding the water, which allows a fire to stay." So it might be plausible that you could lose a wooden building in a torrential downpour, but it sure doesn't feel.
Yeah,
like it's a weird
opposing force kind of thing they set up here. But they set up their limit and they never resolve it, which is weird.
I like the girl stuck in a basement that felt like, you know, the Angela King had a nice moment in her behind episode where she's like, you know, they always are careful about putting the kids in danger because, you know, they don't want it to be a bad experience for the kids. And she's talking about how the water is like a hot tub water and all, but like it looked like it was a terrifying thing, and I'm always a sucker when they put the kids in danger. And that zombie degloving its own head, trying to force its way through that door, is like there was some good ass zombie kills between the Hawacha, the Hawacha dead, the degloved skull, and the double Aaron crush we're about to get to.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get there in a second, but
first, what do you think about Jerry's cough acting?
I thought it was great. It feels more genuine than most shows go for, and it was like so genuine that it almost made me go like, what did he just say? I can't even understand him.
Dude, I think he method acted. I think he inhaled lots of smoke for that scene.
Sure. All right, Daryl kills a guy quickly and quietly enough that he's not found by Leah's people because he's able to hide behind a chalkboard. Is that a secret passage or just a chalkboard pressed up against a doorway?
It seems like a secret passage. They play it off as that. You know? Feels like the Reapers maybe should have done some more exploring, looking for some that unreal architecture you're always hearing about. Like, hey, there should be it's a bigger gap in a hallway than you'd expect. There's way too much dead space here. What's they're just not curious people, those Reapers.
I mean, I moved into this house. I haven't checked for dead space anywhere.
You haven't checked for secret passages?
Oh, I haven't. God.
There's not a zero amount. But I thought the knife fight's pretty well choreographed, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
pretty exciting stuff, yeah.
And I'm just impressed by Reedus. He's like, what, 50, 55? How old is Norman Reedus at this point?
I think he's like 57.
he's getting fucking old, and that dude can still move, man.
Yeah, he's flipping over desks and stuff. He's 53 years old.
Wow.
And he's doing all this Jackie Chan shit, and he's giving quality, you know, feral Daryl guy. Nah! You know, that guy's trying to stick him in there. Nah! You know, he's just like, he's a Wolverine trying to gnaw his own leg off to get away. Yep. Yeah. And then, like, also, there's some stuff I just love what they're doing in The Walking Dead. Like, Daryl is stabbing this guy and choking him out, and he sees a zombie start banging at the door, and he's like, I sleep. And then the zombie gets its brains blown out, and then it's like, oh, it's a human, real shit. Like, like that tension is like...
And they're getting zombies close, too, right? Close enough to see and deal with the walker.
Yeah. And it's like, that's such a great, like, illustration of the core conceit of the show, which has been, like, the zombies are no longer the problem. It's really the people.
Right.
But I liked it. He's just, like, just casually, yeah, it's a zombie. Oh, shit, a person. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I like how he takes his knife again out of the guy's gut, so they won't know that it was him. Necessarily, and he takes the gun because, of course,
ho, he's got a pistol.
All right, Gracie blows her whistle while the walkers advance, and Judith tries to keep him safe but ends up dropping her sword in the rising water. Luckily, Aaron shows up just in time to save them, but he gets trapped in the basement now with a bunch of walkers.
Look at the straight leg kick on Judith, man. Right. She's like kicking for distance. She's going to get 35-yard field goals with these zombie heads, man.
I was totally wondering, like, how do you tell a kid to fake a kick? Like, can kids accurately fake kicks?
She's probably kicking like 18 inches to either side of the zombie's head. And
I noticed that
through
on a couple of those.
But it, like, but with the right depth of field, you can make it look like it's absolutely connecting.
Yeah.
And they did a great job. And I just, again, I fucking love the actor that plays Judith. She's great. And Gracie's too good. Like, she's a good little sidekick for her.
Mm-hmm.
And then how about Double Aaron coming off the top ropes with his slow motion,
physically impossible jump? Yeah, but it's so good. It looks like, I don't know how to describe it. It looks like he slid through head first and then got purchased
half
with his
gainer
legs on the way down and then jumped somehow.
Oh, he double jumped.
Yeah.
You can do his spec. When you spec him out with the mace arm, he gets that ability.
Yeah, and he just splatters that walker's head. I loved it.
Yeah, that's what I had in my mind. It's like, hey, Aaron breaks into the basement, distracts the zombies, somehow? Because, yeah, that that was some ninja magic he used.
And then he gets stuck underwater with one, and he just squeezes until its head pops and its eyeballs
shoot out.
Pull
the Blade Runner on him, yeah.
The zombies are getting really, really mushy now. Before it was like, oh, I guess a knife could go through a skull that's been deteriorating for a few years.
Sure.
Now it's like, I guess you could crush a human head with your bare hands.
They've got the mace hand as one of them, and it is waterlogged. It's been soaking in that water
that's
for at least 5 minutes. Got it nice and noodly.
Get those wet bones.
But oh my god, the fucking eyeball popping out of that murk cloud of Jesus, it's disgusting.
I love it.
All
right, Gabriel runs around inside the compound, ends up in the chapel with the Reaper priest. They chat about the morality of God speaking to a man like him, and the priest says some shit that gets under his skin about not hearing God anymore and losing his faith and all that. Almost gets him to renew his faith in God, but then Gabriel hears his friends fighting outside and murders the guy.
Again, this is another kind of same thing with Maggie and Negan, where like I haven't been completely sold on everything they've done with Gabriel's loss of faith storyline.
Yep.
But the memory of it works, and you know, the memory of him kind of like seeing the guy at the graveyard and like that, you know, like Gabriel really wrestling with like, is this guy full of shit? Is this...
Especially when he used to be this guy, right? Like, that's the thing. This is a mirror that this guy is holding up to Gabriel. And he sees the guy he used to be. But I think this is a long gone guy. This is a guy that disappeared the moment he let his flock die back in that church.
Mm-hmm.
He's been wrestling with that. That has been following him around this entire
But he
series.
Sees that moral weakness, you know, of like, you know, maybe he's a, like, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to be the guy that says you got to stop killing when Pope is telling everybody to kill and they're burning people at the stake to fail him. And
right.
Like, there's this like, I noticed that in my life that, like, the people I tend not to get along with are, like, the negative reflection of who I, like, you know, like, I used to have this personality, or maybe I still struggle with it, and, like, this is a guy who's, like, a raging asshole version of me, and I'm like, oh, God, it drives me crazy, because you see yourself in it. I think that that really got to Gabriel here in this scene, too, and, you know, this is an excellent actor. And even though he's not giving the best material all the time, I think this is pretty... This little duet he did with the priest, I thought was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually like the guy who's playing the Reaper Priest a lot, too.
Yeah, I mean, you can cover God's will being unknown is a pretty fucking broad cloak to cover some bad doing. Right. And if you look at historically, like I said, you know, people have been shedding blood in the name of the biblical God for thousands of years, and he's been cool with it, or else not cared to stop it. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's weird to me. What do you think is going on here with this guy? Is this a psychological thing where he thinks the God is talking to him, but what is really happening is just he's noticing things that he's attributing to God? Like, how could he possibly know that, and not know that Gabriel was there, but then have God tell him that Gabriel was there looking at him?
I interpreted that, of course, I'm a, you know, secular person. I interpreted that as him actually being aware that Gabriel was there, but then attributing it to, like, God, you know, that he caught a movement out of the corner of his eye and became aware that someone's there. And,
like, subconsciously, maybe he knew that Gabriel was there.
Yeah, but he thought God drew his attention to it. Like, maybe a shaft of light hit Gabriel, and, you know, it's pretty easy if you believe in God and he has that active hand. It's pretty easy to see it everywhere if you want to.
For sure.
So, and especially if someone's been through these kind of, like, because remember, like, what Pope's a crazy guy, but they kind of came to it honestly, like, you know, being like miraculously surviving this crazy thing when they're all kind of amoral mercenaries and, you know, like that sometimes has, like, really strong dark effects on people. And I kind of like this new struggling Gabriel. Like, really wrestling with his faith, and what does it mean to have faith, and who can and what can you have faith in these kind of worlds? It looks good on him.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, he seems to be coming around to some idea where it's like, I'm going to doubt myself, but that's part of having faith, right? Like, the doubt that's is good.
That, like, you can't faith without doubt. I mean, that's the thing. Like, faith is the assured expectation of things unseen. Like, if you don't doubt it, then it's not something you have to have faith in. Like,
exactly.
You have that faith in the sun's going to rise, right?
Yeah, that's more of just, like, an understanding.
That's an expectation based on, like, but like, true faith is, you know, and that's, like, you can have faith in people. You can certainly have faith in God. Mm-hmm. But, like, you don't have to have faith in physical processes.
It does seem like it's going to give him at least the clarity of intent that he's looking for, you know, like or the confidence in himself that he's looking for, right? He's not going to moralize constantly if he can become one with his doubts and his
faith. It was something we've worried about, the fact that they might moralize this guy up, and I'm not seeing it, you know, like, to me this
I feel a struggle, but it's not. It's, and I definitely get flip-flopping. It's more of like an everyday, I feel both of these things.
Or a person's worldview slowly evolving, which sometimes has you naturally tacking back and forth. Like I said, there's a right and way, wrong way to do moralizing.
Done both poorly and well.
Yeah, and I can definitely see some people that are on the other side of the equation thinking, like, oh my God, this is going to be the exact same. But I think it is... It's different, especially since this guy is a man of God. He has a lot of things that naturally you'd have to wrestle with living through a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know, any kind of apocalypse would probably that you get left behind on. You'd probably have some thoughts on as a man of God.
Mm-hmm. All right. Maggie leads Carver into a trap where she, Negan, and Elijah attack him. Carver almost fights him off, but Negan plays dirty and knocks him out with a bell, saving Maggie in the process. Maggie's about to kill Carver, but Daryl shows up and knocks him out a second time. This guy, Concussion City, man. Daryl wants to use him as a bargaining chip, and he calls Leah on the walkie.
This is kind of a poor man's Daredevil season 1 hallway fight.
All right. I thought it was actually really smart fight scene.
I wish they could have found corridors a little bit narrower, because I think some of this action would have even played better. But yeah, like this, I think that's something that Kang hinted at in the Kang cave, that these people are intended to be not the equal of the Alexander group, but they're superior fighters in every way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when they're one on one, except for maybe Daryl, like the true champions of the group. But I love how he starts it off
putting all of his enemies on one side, right? Like he's surrounded at the beginning, but he immediately grabs the one behind him and throws him at the others.
Yeah.
You know, thereby reducing the trajectories he can be attacked from. It's It's really actually a good fight.
Yeah, especially since, you know, Elijah's already wounded and Negan, he's been talking about just getting away. So you kind of believe for a split second that he might just be peacing out.
Uh-huh.
And Maggie's already taken, she already, like, you know, beat a dude twice her size earlier in the episode by the skin. So, like, she's kind of beat the, it was a really good fight. And I also loved Negan winning, not with superior skill, but just by playing dirty pocket sand.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, the go-to move of assholes everywhere. Yeah.
I don't know about ding ding.
And that's not a great line.
It's like a little bit kind of like
motherfucker, maybe.
That's what I thought. It could, the ding ding motherfucker is what would have woken it up. But as it is, it's like, I don't know why, because it's a boxing reference. You know, you just wander around, ding ding, you know?
Yeah. But it's like if John McClane said yippee-ki-yay,
right,
that's where it ended, it wouldn't be nearly the catchphrase that it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And they can get away with it.
Yeah. I mean, Aaron shouted strategic shit fuck twice, so.
Can't do two S's and an F.
Right. Right.
I would neuter Aaron's dialogue and give Negan the line.
Yeah. Although I thought it, Aaron's was appropriate. He's climbing around.
But then Walking Dead would probably do that and be like, okay, shitty ding ding shit. God. No, you're supposed to trade it both for an S. Oh, God damn it. They misread my note.
Ding shit shit. Yeah, not great. Aaron's climbing around the plumbing in the basement and he's trying to escape. I'm sorry, this whole scene is kind of ridiculous but kind of great.
Yeah, yeah.
He's climbing around in the plumbing to escape the walkers, and he just gets completely covered in what I presume is human shit, because the pipe breaks and just dumps out.
It's this close to being like a dumb Tim skit from Tool Time, right? Like,
totally.
If he's just like, yeah, on this episode of this old apocalyptic house, you know, Aaron's trying to, Aaron, I don't know what I'm trying to call him, Aaron's trying to install PEX, replaces copper tubing with PEX, but we'll see what the zombies have to say. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's covered in shit. Lydia shows up and pulls him out the window.
Somehow.
So what is the other end of this rope tied to, man?
It's some kind of Wile E. Coyote logical conundrum, because I don't get it. I don't know how Aaron would have that rope tied one-handed while he's hanging upside down over the zombies
from his mace.
And get over to the other side.
Maybe he had like his mechanical hand tucked away in his back pocket.
He's got like go-go gadget action.
I don't know how he would like remove the mace and put that on, but
go gadget pulley. It just like retracts in like Tony Stark nanotech.
Yeah. I don't know. It was wild.
It was wild.
Logic is off the table in this show, man. The laws of physics don't exist. Leah meets with Daryl to negotiate for Carver's life. Things go wrong, let's say, and the deal doesn't work out, but Gabriel ends up taking out their sniper and forces a stalemate, which results in the deal being that they take the town and the Reapers leave alive without Carver, because she wants to carve him up. Maggie does. But then as Leah walks away, Maggie shoots all of the surviving Reapers in the back, except for Leah, who gets shot but runs off.
I don't want to step on Gabriel's moment, because he's had the badass look for the last season or two, but like this sniping thing It's like, there's, you know, whatever. What was this guy's name? There's no Jensen here. Call me Gabriel. And he's like, it cut to his face and his like blood splattered and his good eyes kind of twitching as he's looking down the scope. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, me too. No, I thought that was awesome. He feels like sort of an avenging angel of death here, right? Like, there's just shots coming from the sky. He can't be seen, but yeah. He's out there killing. Yeah.
There's a lot of this futility, like that Daryl's feeling. Like, good Lord, why did we survive through all this just right. to kill so many people? Like, at the end of the day, like, we're going to walk away with something, a deal we could have had a week ago with both of us having 14 more bodies on our side.
And imagine what we could accomplish if we worked together.
Like, right. Right.
It's such a waste. It is such a waste of increasingly important resources, right? The people.
Right. And this is after, on Daryl's side, you talk about all the deaths they've seen, going back to the prison, going back to the governor, going back to Terminus, going back to, you know, the Savior War. Like, it's such a wild thing to live through the zombie apocalypse and then you die because of this stupid shit. And it's really it really seems to be fucking with Daryl's worldview, as we'll see at this really, I think, effective campfire scene. Mm-hmm. I like it. I like it a lot. And they need more badasses because we've lost a lot with Rick and Michonne in the last few years. And I think moving Gabriel into a kind of badass sniper role sounds really cool for the last season.
Yeah. There's a lot of shots of Negan kind of eyeing Maggie as she's killing the Reapers and not liking what he sees.
And it's like, I wish I understood why Elijah's so bereft. Like, is he mad at Carver in particular?
He is.
Because that's what it seemed like. But then, like, when Maggie's going to let the other two go, he was just as disappointed. And it's like, holy shit, you guys have to get everything your way. And I think that's the story they're telling, that Maggie is becoming as extreme. Like, Daryl's ready. Like Negan, like, is the guy who's right. Like, we just need to get out of here with what we've got, you know, intact. Yeah. And Maggie is gone off the deep end.
Yeah, and Daryl wants second chances for everyone, as he says in the next scene. He looks around for Leah, but he is really only there to tell her he's sorry and that she should leave before he kills her. We both could have had a second chance.
I gotta say, Lee would be way more effective if we had time to understand her and Daryl's relationship and knew more than a single episode before they deployed her as an arch villain.
Mm-hmm.
But she's got really interesting possibilities as an arch villain now.
Oh, sure.
Like, it seems like you've got a surfeit of villains, you know, with like Maggie Green doing the the face heel turn with, Better Call Saul man from the Commonwealth and the Commonwealth itself. Like, you've got like, I wonder where this Leah thing, this the Leah shoe is going to drop.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the next 15 episodes. Left. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
15 episodes left. And yeah, it has me wondering, are they rounding the corner now into this is the final arc we want to tell? Or are they going to have a true villain again? Is it like the rest of this is Commonwealth and figuring out how these communities either intertwine and enmesh here or don't?
I hope that, or I guess if, you know, this stupid flash forward kind of spoiling things, I'm guessing that that's going to be the climax of this 11B season.
Uh-huh.
And then resolving that will be the work of the final season C.
I bet it'll be the work of another show, a spinoff.
Is Daryl and Carol just going to join the Commonwealth?
Maybe, man.
It's going to be like an episode. It's going to be like a season of Cops, only just, you know, patrolling the Commonwealth.
What role do you think Carol has in the Commonwealth?
Ice cream enforcer.
Sure,
we
Baker.
We got a
Baker. Hell yeah.
We got a rocky road in a designated Cherry Garcia. We're going to need someone to come down here and look at this.
I mean,
ice cream cones aren't adding up.
Brother is going to get killed, right? Yumiko's brother is going to get killed because he's lying about not being a baker, and then Carol's going to step into that role.
He's going to be chained to an operating table.
Daryl and Carol are both going to be like, this ain't what I wanted. Nah, mm-hmm. nah. Mm-hmm. He's going to realize it's not, everything's not positive there. And then she's going to start an undercover bakery that poisons people. and he's just gonna murder people out in the open. Bring it.
But how does he turn? You're not showing how he actually turns onto the side of the Commonwealth.
Well, we yada yada past that. He already does. We know he does.
Oh, I'm talking beyond. So you're saying past post kicking in Maggie Green's door in. Okay,
right. Right. He gets upset by that. Anyway, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, Daryl returns to where Maggie and the others are posted up. Gives Maggie the cold shoulder. And Maggie then says goodbye to everyone and tells them, take the food back to Alexandria. I'm going somewhere else. And Negan seems very concerned.
Why doesn't anyone want to accompany her to go see, check on Alden?
I don't know.
It felt weird that she was going like it seems... This is kind of another thing that bothered me, but I'm trying to be charitable. This seems to be the case only so that Maggie and Negan can have a private conversation where the implication is Maggie probably killed him.
Yeah. Was Negan the person who was going with her? I feel like that's foolish if that's the case. Like, right. They didn't send Negan with her, right?
No, they didn't. Negan, because like they came back and was like, have you seen Negan? And because he said that he was going to be back in a minute or something like that. And
gotcha.
Yeah. And also the implication that like Daryl and Gabriel sitting there warming their feet by the fire and Negan's like, where's Maggie? She took off on some. Oh, well, I got a private mission. I got to take off too. Like,
right.
It's like.
It's like, know, when like you're trying to arrange the attempt at getting in the Mile High Club. Like one person going to the bathroom, that makes sense, right? But when the second person says, yeah, I got to go to the bathroom too.
Yeah, the stewards know exactly what's up.
Right, right.
I do wonder, because that's the thing. It's like as much praise as given for the nonverbal kind of acting of like, oh, Maggie might have killed this dude in cold blood and he's become a valued member of our team in her absence. There's also like, at some reading of Gabriel and Daryl kind of like rooting for Negan to kill Maggie because they knew the Maggie went off. They knew like, yeah, like nobody wants to like keep an eye on Negan, not even Daryl. Like
at least we can resolve this. I don't know. Cause yeah, there's still some just unresolved shit going on between them. Obviously.
Yeah. I don't know why they set up that Negan told them that he was walking off, because the other way to fix it is just like, hey, we got separated. You find Negan. Oh yeah. He said he's going to go out for a pack of smokes. That would resolve to like Daryl and Gabe like, well, tell her hi if you find her, you know, kind of right. Keep sipping their beer.
So Maggie, as we mentioned, goes to where they left Boston Rob. He's been zombified.
I think you mean Boston Rob Zombie.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
I think I'm going to post on Sunday night like a spoil out of context Walking Dead spoiler that's just a cat cover, an album cover of Boston and Rob Zombie's face
in House of a Thousand Corpses. Yeah,
this is Boston Rob Zombie.
Oh my God. Maggie puts him down and buries him, and then Negan shows up. He's decided that Maggie's eventually going to kill him, so he makes the choice to leave the group and walks off.
Yeah, she's burying here Boston Rob Zombie. I actually thought this was, because like, you know, again, this is the show respecting its own history, that Alden was the first of kind of the converts from the Negan, from being a Neganite to like, hey, I see what you guys are doing here and you've made me a believer, you know? So like this heightens everyone, I think, in this episode is feeling some kind of like, what difference does it make the choices we made? Like, we did things right and you did things wrong, and then you came over to our side and you're now on our team, and I got you killed on a food run anyway. Like, I did like what they're doing there. It's funny though, because like, this wasn't a surprise, right? They've been gone for like 3 days. He was on death's door.
They left him with a Hershey bar.
Left him with a granola bar and some and backwash water. And
actively bleeding out? I can't remember. He was injured.
He was fucked
injured.
Up pretty bad from the Reapers. So like, it's not a surprise, but
yeah.
And it also represents the price Maggie paid. Like, cause she could have turned back and saved all those people when it got to be like when the hurricane started happening, when the numbers weren't on their side. Like, so many times she had a chance to like call this off. But on the other hand, I don't know, maybe I keep thinking about the decision tree, and it's like, well, you criticize that, but like, if they'd have just gone back, what would have actually happened is, as everyone is feeling sorry for themselves or they're about to imminently starve, the Commonwealth would roll up with a convoy of supplies and be like, here's your salvation.
Right.
So like, I think in the ultimate analysis, Maggie's dead wrong here.
Oh, yeah. The question I have is, will she learn anything from this? And the answer I'm getting immediately with a 6-month flash forward is
nope. She's just going to literally harden her walls against any kind of growth and self-improvement.
They're turning Maggie into a villain, which is, I guess, interesting.
And it's
a pretty like nuanced way to become a villain. Especially with a character we've loved for so long, but
I wish they could keep it in their pants for half a season. God damn. Not even that, third of a season. Right. Like, this would have been so much interesting to debate. Like,
yeah.
Because I had in like going into the final scene, I'm like, oh my God, is Maggie going evil? Because Daryl and Gabriel, the looks they're exchanging are like, oh my God, Maggie might be going evil. And yeah, it turns out she is, or somebody's going evil.
Yeah.
I'm afraid though.
that they're our expectation now is that Maggie's evil and Daryl's the good one, right? What if they are like getting extra clever and like we're gonna confound you? I'm not sure I will be pleased with that.
I don't know. We are still looking for a sinister side, and there's a bit of a sinister side to the Commonwealth, right? I mean,
sure,
it's not doesn't seem like there's a lot of choice in that community or personal freedoms in that community, but
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see. I could not help but think when she's down on the floor and Boston Rob Zombie's crawling toward her, she just has. She's incapable of learning anything, right? I mean, she's sitting here cradling a zombie's face with her bare hands.
Dude.
She has learned that that's a bad idea by now?
I get that this is Steve Irwin with a crocodile at this point, and she kind of knows what she's doing, but damn, yeah. Risky. I was... That felt pretty foolhardy.
Yeah. All right, we move on to Gabriel trying to talk with Daryl about the morality of choices and faith. And Maggie returns with the bad news about Boston Rob Zombie and Negan. one's left them, the other has died.
Yeah, I think we've talked around it, but I really like this fireside chat that Gabriel and Daryl have about choices and whether they're doing things wrong. Like, that implies to me, like, maybe Daryl will go evil and authoritarian because, like, elite, hey, man, bottom line is what saves people. And, you know, doing this democracy and the Commonwealth pact that we had, you know, is not shit, but these guys are getting stuff. I could see him maybe becoming a real Law and Order, you know, bootlicker type dude.
Yeah, especially if you got Carol, you know, wanting to open her bakery, whispering in his ear saying, we could settle down here, Daryl.
That's right. I could have that baking show that got canceled back in season 6.
Yep.
Make the dream happen.
We'll see.
Cooking show. Baking, that's too limited. She is cooking with Carol.
She's, jack of all cooking and baking trades.
That's the other thing. That, like, this is a really important realization, too. Is like, it's good to have doubt and to be, like, circumspect about, you know, your capabilities and your faculties and your level of education and all that kind of stuff. But also... the presence of doubt does not indicate that you are, in fact, wrong.
Sure.
You know, it could just be you're having a crisis of confidence. Like, I think that's Daryl. Like, he's like, has had so many blows. All of our good guys. Like, it's just been one goddamn thing after another.
Totally.
You know, since the hilltop burnt up. And they're really kind of like emotionally on the ropes.
All right, Daryl, Maggie, Gabriel, Elijah all return to Alexandria with bittersweet news. They've lost like 90% of their group. So that's the bitter part. But they did get a little bit of food. They got about as much as I think each of them could have carried in their hands had they just walked out with it.
That's one of those things where, like, I think you're supposed to understand that this wagon load is like months worth of food.
Or the first of many wagon loads, right?
Yeah, that's like, true. But also I'm looking at, like, them onions are going to be good for 4 weeks tops. Right? Those apples,
yeah,
not
feed them
even
to the fucking dog because you're not getting through that bushel.
Yeah, you got 2 weeks to eat all this food. You know, this isn't canned goods and stuff. This is just perish.
Yeah, I think they will can guys. Them, I'm sure. Carol's going to be out there canning stuff.
How long has it been sitting? I guess this is all like Maggie Town being overrun is like a week or two ago at most, right?
I think so. It was quick.
It just happened because they were actively being hunted by the Reapers. So
yeah,
maybe the stuff being you know there is makes more sense than I was giving it credit for.
So, yeah, they're all reuniting and stuff, and Daryl gets to reunite with Connie, which is cute. He's got a million questions for her later. And then Eugene shows up with the Commonwealth and their soldiers, and Lance is this Better Call Saul guy's name.
Uh-huh.
Did they...
Hornsby. All right,
do you remember anything about what happened at the end of last season? Didn't Eugene just royally piss off the leader of their community by like making by
no, they set him up.
They
I think they engineered a situation where Eugene would feel like he committed a grave sin and that Hornsby kind of came in with like, I can make this all, but like he kind of like That's how he got Eugene to like come clean about Alexandria.
Pressured him into revealing the location.
Made him feel really vulnerable. Yeah,
I couldn't remember if they had yada yadded over that because in my head I'm thinking, well, they yada yadded over the windmill, so maybe they just yada yadded over all this.
Right.
But no, you
got
right.
it. They got the windmill put out though. Good for them.
Apparently, off screen somewhere. You know, because Chekhov's gun always goes off screen too. Right, that's the important thing about Chekhov's gun is that you never actually see it go off, but you know that it.
Yeah,
went
it'd be
off.
Funny if like the Carver scene had been resolved with Negan walking in like dusting his hands like, "Hey Maggie, that pocket sand sure came in handy in subduing this badass." Like,
right?
You can do it. Like, fuck it. You know these episodes gonna be 5 minutes long. We keep doing this.
Hmm. So Lance introduces himself to Alexandria and offers to either fold. Well. Potentially, he doesn't actually state what the other offer is. He offers to either give them supplies and manpower to fix up their communities, or a better offer, which I assume is to fold them into the Commonwealth. And then we get just one of the slickest transitions I've ever seen. It's fantastic. To 6 months later, flash forward, where Daryl is working with the Commonwealth as a soldier and demanding that Maggie open the gates to Hilltop as she stands firmly atop them going, Nah.
Speaking I'm gonna try. They're having an out feral. Feral Maggie versus feral Daryl, or recently domesticated Daryl. They've housebroken him.
Yeah.
I just want to make because I know that 97.3% of the audience no longer watches the show. They just listen to our podcast.
Mm-hmm.
When Jim says this is a slick transition, what he means is they have like all of Alexandria that's a fighting age on the hilltop ready to lead a doomed resistance to the Commonwealth until Eugene runs up and's like, no, hear him out. And they kind of like, as Hornsby's talking, they're panning across everyone's faces and, the camera's looking up against the sky and everyone's looking grim and they get to Maggie and then
First they get to Daryl and Daryl looks at Maggie.
Yes.
And like, then this, what you're
and then describe. It does this fancy camera move where it's like kind of like pans up and maybe a drone shot, but it pulls out and now Maggie's standing on the hilltop.
Yeah, it's a little more desaturated, so it's a flash forward, and then
but it happens like it almost like the sun got in the camera's eye, and that's how it got desaturated. It's like it's really slick,
it's
very
cool.
Impressive.
Yeah, and I just love like the switching of sides and switching the fluid loyalties that it shows here, because like Daryl looking at Maggie in that moment and then it transitioning and then Daryl walking up and pulling his helmet off on the other side of this equation is like,
yeah, because you see this faceless really goon, like all these faceless goons standing outside the gates and Hornsby's there and he like whispers something into the lead guy. And, you know, Maggie's doing like, it doesn't have to be this way. And it's like, how many times have we seen Rick or Maggie or Michonne say shit like this to the sneering villain and the faces goon pull and it's fucking there.
Right.
Again, it's a cool moment, but I don't know if it's worth putting your thumb on the scales this hard. And also, especially since I really am like 50-50 on them just subverting the expectation, doing this just to subvert the expectation, which either of those, honestly, Daryl preferring like questioning his choices about like, you know, I've really gone with like the Rick and Michonne plan. That's not how I was raised. Have you met my brother? Maybe we're doing this all wrong. And not like, are we going to be crazy assholes like Negan? But like, maybe we need some fucking law and order and all. And like going, I could see that, but like, damn, I just don't know what the utility is other than, I don't know, again, getting people buzzing about it. But shit, it's the last season, man. Entertain the few of us that are left.
Did you hear about that crazy thing that happened 11 seasons into the show you're not watching?
Are you still watching The Walking Dead? Oh my God, you lame weirdo. You're bad and gross. You do a podcast on Jesus. Honey, this guy's doing a podcast in the walk. Yeah, it's like, I know what that I don't want any of that bullying. Get the fuck out of here. I'm not carrying your water, Kang.
Apparently this episode is dedicated to Stephen Campbell, who was a cinematographer on The Walking Dead who died last year.
Yeah. Late last year, right? Like this happened like
November of last year. Yeah.
Yeah. And worked on the show for 8 years, right?
Mm-hmm. Long time.
So there's tons and tons. I checked on social media, like everybody who's anybody in The Walking Dead had like photos posted of him, and it seemed like a good guy. And it's a shame.
Yeah, but that's it for The Walking Dead. You can't even say mid-season premiere anymore. Now no. You have to say like a. I can't describe what this is. I can't. It's just an episode 9.
It's a triplet of octologies. We're on the second octology.
Sure. The octological premiere.
AMC The Ocho, part B. Like, it's not good.
The fuck? AMC, you've lost the thread, man. You've lost it.
Yeah, the annualizing profits over a predictably quarterly stretch of, what this season is. Did you see the next time on?
They should just start airing investor meetings as Walking Dead episodes, right? Like just board of directors meetings and investor reports.
Yeah, have all the actors there as their character, like as they're deciding what kind of budget they get, and like, you know, have Gracie and Judith cry when they get slashed because, you know, this mean, you know, that some one of you kids going to die. I can't afford both of you. That'd be funny. Well, did you see the next time on?
I turned it off as soon as I could, but I caught glimpses of Daryl.
Looks like we got
a Commonwealth.
Yep. Another Street Fair Renfest situation.
That's what I was thinking, Kingdom all over again.
It's the insidious effect of Ezekiel rotting the Commonwealth from the inside out like a cancerous tumor. It's just the first stage. This is it's metastasized. It's going to next time we're going to have he's going to convince the Commonwealth they need to go to the nearest Cineplex and steal a cinema bulb.
Oh, I bet they've got digital projectors. They got that DLP technology, man.
You know how bad a VHS tape would look projected on the 30-foot widescreen?
I'm sure they're playing at least DVDs, if not
480i. Oh, yeah, baby. That's going to be amazing.
God. Yeah, but we'll find out soon enough. We'll be back next week for another episode.
And our coverage for this episode's not over yet. We're going to be doing a dedicated feedback episode since we're dropping these at the same time the episode airs. So if you AMC Plus folks already got some thoughts in mind, or if you just watched the episode and you want to check out, you got some thoughts, send those in to watchingdead@baldmove.com and we'll read them. Send them in by Tuesday morning and we'll read it on the podcast. Otherwise, yeah, we'll see you next Sunday for the next exciting episode of Watching Dead. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.